and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and thank you for joining us this afternoon. This program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. Today is my 20 minutes of fame. I'm here all by my lonesome because at the second break, you'll be listening to my conversation with James Corbett of the Corbett Report. And a very interesting discussion that we had the other day or the other night that we pre-record, and that will be coming to you at the second break. So once again, thank you for joining me, and of course Dave Allen will be here on Monday, and today is July 12th, 2019. And ladies and gentlemen, let's go ahead and see. Gold had another terrific day, back up $11 at $1,415. Silver was up 10 pennies today at $15.30. Platinum was up $7 at $834. Palladium was down 13 at $15.54. And let's see, the USDX today is down 0.23 at 96.83. Crude oil was higher today. Well, basically, in the aftermarket, it's showing, well, it hit 60 at 60.20. And let me get to the paper markets today. You have the Dow, again, new records, both for the S&P and the Dow. The Dow was up 243 points at 27,332. The NASDAQ was up 48 points at 8,244. The S&P was up 13 at 3,013. And 10-year yield 211, 2.11%. European markets technologies, the sectors technology was up 9%, health services up 8%. And I would think that the tech sector would do well today only because you had France. It was interesting. There was this tech summit in D.C. yesterday. Couple of the companies weren't invited. The typical ones, Facebook, Amazon, I believe, were two that weren't there. But now France has passed a digital tax that's supposed to affect major U.S. tech companies. And now President Trump is going to retaliate by putting steep tariffs on an iconic French product such as wine, cheese, perfumes. And the U.S. Trade Representative has already opened an investigation that would allow it to fight back by putting duties on French products. So, you know, it's all, you know, there's no difference, ladies and gentlemen. I would think that's why the stocks were up, techs were up big today, because they knew that the president was going to be fighting for them and fighting France. And the President Trump could fight back against France's new tax on U.S. technology companies and, of course, by unleashing more tariffs on these products. The French Senate yesterday passed a 3% tax that will allow American firms such as Facebook and Google, that will affect American firms such as Facebook and Google. The tax already has been approved by France's National Assembly, and it would apply to companies that draw about $850 million in revenue worldwide from digital services and about $28 million from within France. So ahead of the tax passage, the Office of the U.S. Trade Representatives started an investigation into whether the measure is discriminatory or unreasonable and burdens or restricts the United States commerce. And this is, of course, from the U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer. Once it finishes the probe, the agency could retaliate with tariffs or other steps to deter France and potentially other countries from putting new taxes on top of U.S. countries. So, I mean, this is all going to take time. There's a probe under the Section 301 of the Trade Act of 1974. It could actually take up to a year. And this is from a Georgetown law professor, Jennifer Hillman, and of course also a World Trade Organization. So she thinks that you know, the Trump administration, again, as I mentioned, wine, cheese, or perfume, In a CNBC interview last month, President Trump suggested that he would put the tariffs on wine. He said that California wine producers have complained to him about France putting higher tariffs on imports from the United States. So France exported 3.2 billion euros in wine to the U.S. last year. So it's interesting, as you know, again, it's a, you know, it's just another tit for tat type of a situation, and you kind of think, is it ever going to end? And I had another article here that I wanted to talk about, and it was about the rare minerals. The global rare earth market, how it's going to grow from $8.1 billion in 2018 to more than $14.4 billion by 2025. And we all know that back in May, China had threatened to cut off the supply to the U.S. as part of the U.S.-China trade war. And I was reading this article about Wyoming, and Wyoming could play a very important role in this because since 2004, in Wyoming, rare earth resources have been exploring this area in Wyoming, Bear Lodge, because Bear Lodge is home to one of the richest and highest grade rare earth deposits in the United States. It has an estimated 18 million tons of rare earth inside. So this rare earth resources has been exploring this area since 2004. And so that's a long time. Thinking, well, gee, you're exploring, then why hasn't anything been done? And, of course, many people, especially in the mining community, they are excited about this, but it is all about regulations. China produces about 70% of rare earth in the world, while 80% of America's rare earth imports come from China. In 2018, China produced 120,000 metric tons of rare earth, and the United States, we produced just 15,000 metric tons, up from zero in 2017. So, you know, the rare earth isn't actually rare. There's an estimated 99 million tons of it in the earth's crust, though it is just hard to find in large quantities of the metal all in one spot. And, you know, before 1995, barely anyone paid any attention to this market, to this mineral. But, of course, demand has skyrocketed. You know, we know what it's all used in. We know it's used in cell phones, headphones, electric vehicle motors. So, you know, and there's a lot of these other minerals, self-cleaning onions, ovens, onions, self-cleaning. Did you hear that? Self-cleaning onions, self-cleaning ovens, and of course, the Defense Department. And this is where I come in because it's, an update on that article today. I thought, oh, now I know why all of a sudden it's becoming important. The Pentagon. The Pentagon now all of a sudden is racing to track the U.S. rare earths output among the China trade dispute. And so the Pentagon is trying to secure a stable supply of the specialized material. And so we're trying to, and which I think is a good idea, but I just find it interesting that it's the Pentagon who wants miners to describe plans to develop U.S. rare earths. Now, this other company's been researching since 2004. So now all of a sudden the Pentagon wants to get involved. And they want to have this all done by July 31st. So they want this plan by the miners to develop U.S. rare earth mines and processing facilities and ask manufacturers to detail their needs for the minerals. According to a document which is dated June 27th, but responses are required by July 31st. Now, a short time frame that underscores the Pentagon's urgency. This article then says the U.S. government's fiscal year ends in September. Aha! Now we get it. The Pentagon. More money, more money, more money. We got to get this done before the fiscal year ends in September, because we also know we have that debt ceiling that they have to deal with. The U.S. Air Force, which is part of the Pentagon and created this document, confirmed the document's existence. The responses will be reviewed by two government contractors. Yeah. Northrop Grumman Corporation. So the government wants to know just how much of these minerals we would eventually produce and how soon. This is Texas Mineral Resources, which is working to develop the Round Top rare earth deposits in the state's western edge. And again, that's Texas. So several miners have declined to comment if they would reply to the Pentagon. And so again, it's more money, more money, more money. And the Pentagon's request is derived in part from the Defense Production Act, a 1950s era U.S. law that gives the Pentagon wide berth to procure equipment necessary for the national defense. And sometimes the financial assistance is ultimately expected for the industry after the Pentagon reviews the responses, according to the industry analysts and consultants. So the way I figure it, the government has buddies in these two major, contractors that they want to get the money for, because there's going to be subsidies, and knock out all these other miners and so on. I don't know if that's the case, but that's the way it usually works, doesn't it? Isn't that the way it works? But very interesting. I thought it was very interesting. The Pentagon request builds on several executive orders from President Trump's strategic minerals, which he has said are critical for national defense. And of course, we do have several U.S. senators that have sponsored legislation in recent weeks to boost domestic production of lithium, rare earth, and some other strategic minerals. Marco Rubio, yesterday, he introduced a bill that would let rare earth producers form cooperatives. Isn't that what they did with fracking? I believe, I'm not sure. But this would also avoid the U.S. antitrust statutes. So, you know, that's just, you know, it's pretty much all the same, ladies and gentlemen. Different day, different noise. But it's pretty much all the same. A couple of headline topics we have. Let's see, as long as my computer doesn't freeze here, which, as you know, I've been, even though it's 90 degrees, my computer is freezing. A company filed Chapter 11 bankruptcy today. They're looking to close all of its 261 stores in 38 states. It's a jewelry and accessories retailer, Charming Charlie. They filed bankruptcy, Chapter 11. And that's a lot of stores, 261 in 38 states. And qualifying as what restructuring industry professionals call a Chapter 22 bankruptcy. I don't know how you file for... The filing marks, this is the company's second Chapter 11 case. So I guess they had to file for Chapter 11 bankruptcy twice before you can get the better one, Chapter 22 bankruptcy. I mean, it's just bizarre. It's just silly. I got about 15 minutes left, ladies and gentlemen. Remember, 90% silver. We got $25 face value bags. Buy two little bags, 50 face. We'll include shipping for you. Great prices on that. We still recommend the 50-cent pieces. While I was scoping around looking for news today, I came across this article from Brandon Smith, and I won't have time to read the whole thing to you. And I know you guys don't like to hear people read to you, but I think he is from one of my competitors, but he really hit home. Because this is what we talk about all the time on this program. Talk about the noise, the propaganda. And he starts this out by talking about how false hope breeds crippling apathy. And this is all related to the news media noise over the second arrest of billionaire Jeffrey Epstein. And of course, there's questions, of course, whether he was a billionaire, millionaire, or whatever. But at this point, we'll call him a billionaire. Or similar events, which in most cases end up fading into the background and forgotten. The public's favorite distraction has always been to watch high-profile people kicked out of their castles in the clouds. But Brandon says he would like to point out that even when the globalists sacrifice one of their own in the public eye, it is usually only to satisfy the masses and their hunger for justice. And it's usually for a very short period of time. The system is not designed to root out evil. It is designed to obscure and perpetuate evil. And I agree, and I think that was very important. And Epstein is the perfect example of this. He's already been prosecuted on pedophilia charges 12 years ago. He received a sweetheart deal. How many child rapists get that kind of treatment in our court system? And what about the vast array of people, including political leaders, that were close friends and associates? Are we really to believe they knew nothing about what was going on, that they visited his islands and everything and never saw any wrongdoing? Let me take you back to State College. Remember the university, Penn State? Everybody knew for years that there was something going on, but nobody said anything, nobody did anything. There was a prosecutor who went missing as he was investigating this. Everything's brushed under the rug. You had, I can't remember his name, but he was a Bush crony. Goes in there, Louis Freeze, I think it was, went in there to investigate, and of course, and all that went down to D.C., you know, with the boys and everything that was going on in the college, Penn State, basically killed Joe Paul, the football coach. They all knew. And what'd they do about it? That's the same thing here. Everybody knows what's going on. What do they do? Well, they're benefiting from it, of course. And why don't they come forward? Why do they wait? Why did these people wait until Epstein was already being prosecuted? The point is here, people should lower their expectations that justice is going to be served or that the dominoes are going to fall, as in the Epstein case. Keep in mind that James Comey's daughter, Maureen Comey, will be on the prosecution team in the case, and Donald Trump's labor secretary is the same man, well, ex-secretary, because he resigned today, is the same man that brokered the immunity deal. They're like strands of malignant cancer. These people are wrapped around every facet of government. And this just isn't about Epstein. He's just one of them. Does anybody remember Bernie Madoff? He ran the Ponzi scheme. $65 billion was devoured out of his client's fund. And he was sentenced to 150 years in prison. Do you think he was the only one? What about the bank? What about J.P. Morgan that helped Madoff move his stolen money? They got nothing but a fine. Heck, they just own a ship worth $1 billion worth of drugs. Are they going to be responsible for that? Heck no. We're heading into the break, and I am going to finish this up. I'll probably put it in our newsletter, so make sure you sign up for the newsletter. Discount Gold and Silver Trading. And there's the music. I got to leave. We'll be back. James Corbett, myself. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Gentlemen, you're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and yes, our second segment today, I am pleased to welcome James Corbett of the Corbett Report to the program as he joins us every other week. Wish we could have him here more often, but, you know, maybe we can encourage him to, you know, maybe every other week. Well, I guess that's what you're doing now.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I'm doing every other week. Don't add more to my plate, please.
I know. I'm just kidding. But I do want to welcome you to the program. I want to encourage the listeners to visit your website, thecorbettreport.com, thecorbettreport.com. And, of course, you're also the lead writer for the International Forecaster. And please, ladies and gentlemen, visit theinternationalforecaster.com. Request your complimentary copy and subscribe to the newsletter. It's a great, great newsletter that comes out twice a week. So let's get started right away, James. There was a couple of things I wanted to talk about, and I just saw the headline, and 5 Iranian boats. Now, we're pre-recording this on Wednesday evening. This will air Friday, so a lot's going to transpire between now and Friday, but 5 Iranian boats reportedly tried to seize a British oil tanker off Iran yesterday. The Iran's elite Revolutionary Guard tried to take control of the vessel as it passed through the Strait of Hormuz. And, of course, that's just sparked a little bit of a tense standoff in the Persian Gulf. Same old thing, or is this just a flexing of muscles? Is this trying to engage confrontation to take it to the next level? Do we need to pay attention, or is this just another fake news?
Maybe all of the above. You know, I don't know. Well, okay. First of all, I am just seeing this news now myself, so I can't comment on this particular story in any degree of detail. And as you say, it will probably move on by the time we arrive at Friday when people are listening to this. But just in a general sense, I will say that it has been the go-to for decades and decades and decades for the U.S. Deep state establishment, whatever you want to call it, to launch naval false flags of one form or another in order to justify broader wars. Of course, everyone knows that's how the U.S. got into World War II. I mean, whatever you think of Pearl Harbor and what happened there and how it happened, but at any rate, that is what got the U.S. into World War II and broke what was at that time a very strong isolationist I'm even adopting these words, and those words are weaponized. It's not isolationist to not want to get involved in foreign wars, but that's, of course, the way that it's portrayed. Anyway, there was an America First movement that was very strong at that time, but that was completely overcome by Pearl Harbor. And this is a lesson of history. It was how the USS Maine, the sinking of the Maine, and, you know, to hell with Spain, got the U.S. into the Spanish-American War. It's how the Vietnam War officially launched, although, of course, the U.S. was already there in a military capacity before the Gulf of Tonkin incident. That was, of course, the official justification for the launching of what became the Vietnam War, although, of course, not an officially declared war, but still, kinetic military action, whatever they call it. And we know, as I detailed in a video report quite recently on 4 times the U.S. staged an attack to blame it on Iran, something along those lines, or threatened to stage an attack. We know that Seymour Hersh has reported that Vice President Cheney at the time, in, of course, the Bush administration, back a decade plus ago, had a meeting in which various options for starting a war with Iran were discussed, including dressing U.S. Naval officers up as Iranians, dressing up a boat as an Iranian PT boat, and staging an incident where they fired on an American vessel in order to justify an invasion of Iran or a military response against Iran. That was ultimately rejected. It must be said that plan was ultimately rejected because you can't fire on Americans with Americans. But at any rate, it was talked about in that meeting. So we know that this is a go-to. So that's why whenever there's these kinds of incidents in the Persian Gulf, in the Gulf of Oman, and these other sensitive areas, I have to think about that history and have to wonder, are we being reported the truth? Having said that, let's not always and reflexively dismiss everything. These types of incidents certainly could be Iran trying to use its actual sovereign right to defend its own waters and territories, which is happens all the time. For example, the recent shoot down of that drone over Iranian airspace, as Iran has pointed out, was almost used as some sort of justification for some sort of strike that apparently, supposedly, Trump called off, although there's a lot of question marks about that incident. So there is there are genuine motives for Iran to be active and patrolling its waters and territories. So we shouldn't dismiss these types of things as fake news without further justification. If people want that side of the story, I will point them to the Moon of Alabama blog, which does a lot of good, thoughtful, serious posts on geopolitical issues, and did have one up right after that time a few weeks ago when the Japanese Prime Minister was visiting Iran and there was those attacks on the tankers in the Gulf of Oman. There was a post up on Moon of Alabama. Today's attacks on ships in the Gulf of Oman are not in Iran's interest, dash, or are they? In which he makes a case, well, this could be Iran, and they do have reasons for doing this type of thing, and they have done this type of thing in the past. So we shouldn't just knee-jerk dismiss this information, but we have to take it with a grain of salt, and we have to understand the context which it's coming in. And I'll put this in my own way of looking at these incidents. Whether it is Iran, or whether it is the U.S., or, you know, Israel or Saudi Arabia or whoever else staging an attack in order to blame it on Iran, whatever the case may be, we know whoever is doing it specifically to ramp up tensions and to escalate things into a crisis. And that does benefit extremists on all sides of the conflict, people who want and desire some sort of conflict and war. But it certainly doesn't benefit humanity as a whole. And, you know, we're already starting to see the stories about if there's some sort of incident in the Persian Gulf, if we go to war with Iran, you know, $325 barrel oil, as if that's what everything boils down to. But it is certainly something that it will boil down to in one way, which will be absolute chaos and bedlam, and obviously the trigger for the next stage in the ongoing financial crisis.
Let's not forget 20,000 gold.
Yeah.
But you know what's interesting, though, James? Just yesterday we talked about it was reported that there was a secret meeting between the U.S. and Iran. That was just yesterday. That they had held a private meeting between the two countries. And what I don't understand about this, why would they go after a Brit, a Royal Navy frigate? I mean, they're trying to keep Europe, the European Union, and the UK in the agreement. So why would they go after their ship?
Yeah. I'm not sure UK is part of that agreement. I have to look it up, the P5 plus one, but I'm not sure UK is a signatory to that, are they? Yeah, we need to look that up. But regardless, you are correct. Yes, clearly Iran, to the extent that it wants to target anything, would be more interested in the U.S. specifically because of the sanctions and all of that. And yes, they clearly, it would not be in their interest to start something with a European, whatever that means, post-Brexit, but a European power, because all of this is on this knife edge of, well, Europe is going to start their own swift alternative in order to transact with Iran and to skirt U.S. sanctions and all of this stuff. Yeah, it is a knife edge situation. And again, the only possible outcome of an incident like this is to drive chaos in the region.
I believe, you know, I want to get to your Clash of Civilization newsletter article you wrote. But first, you know Jim Sinclair. Are you familiar with Jim Sinclair?
Yes, I don't follow his work, but I'm familiar with him.
Well, there was a recent interview with Greg Hunter and his business partner, Bill Holter, and they were talking about two various resets of the U.S. dollar. And Sinclair says he believes the reset has already started. It's going to happen in two segments. The first reset, the dollar is going to get sliced in half. The second reset is going to take gold to a price where it will balance the ability to pay global debt. We all know what the global debt is. And, of course, this comes with the predictions of gold prices, you know, off the charts to the moon and back and so forth, which I believe gold is going to go, but I don't think it's going to go with their latest prediction of, you know, $50,000 and $85,000. My question, though, with all of this being said, with the resets and where we are financially, whether whatever the catalyst is to create this avalanche of what we're going to face in the financial markets, will President Trump, will he be the one to preside over this mother of all bankruptcies that we see?
Yeah, that's certainly a possibility, isn't it? And these things often take place around the time of elections, election campaigns, and transitions, because then it is very easy to dump all of the blame on this particular bird and then change out the liner in the birdcage and put in a new bird and act as if the new bird is the savior. That's, of course, exactly what happened at the very, very end of the Bush administration, where we saw the Lehman collapse and that crisis taking place as the just in the final stages of the 2008 election selection campaign. And Obama comes in as one of the saviors. Obama and McCain made their joint statements about preserving the economy and all of this. And, you know, everyone rallies around to try to save the economy that, again, can be blamed partisanly. It can be blamed entirely on Bush, for example, and then, oh, it's a Republican thing, so we'll get a Democrat in, and everything will go swimmingly. And then that's very possible. I mean, certainly Trump does have political enemies. I mean, regardless of what you think of him, he does have political enemies, and it would be very enticing for them, and there is motivation for them to start some sort of economic cataclysm, seismic earthquake during his watch, so that they can then blame him for it, and this could be part of the 2020 selection circus that's coming. So that's certainly one of the factors in this, although it's not, as I think that that synopsis paints, that's not the fundamental factor here. It isn't fundamentally about a Republican or a Democrat in office or anything like that. It is fundamentally the way the system is structured and what we've been talking about for a very long time. I've been talking about it for over a decade now. I'm sure you've been talking about it for longer. And we know that the system is going to collapse in some form. It is not going to persist in the way that it is. The only question is when and how that transition takes place. And if it takes place under Trump, I'm sure they'll blame it on the Republicans, and that will be some sort of justification for voting Democrat, I guess.
Oh, heaven help us. Well, you know, just recently this week, President Trump has asked his aides to find ways to weaken the dollar. He says, if you can't beat them, join them. So, isn't that great monetary policy?
If you can't beat them, join them. Yeah, indeed.
So, any comments on that as far as, is this just part of the game they're playing and so forth? And
weakening,
it's a sad game because people are their lives are going to be destroyed.
Weakening of currencies, beggar thy neighbor, the race to the bottom. We have seen this before, and we saw it in the 1930s, and that should paint some sort of picture of where this type of thing can devolve into in the coming years, and that's a scary thing for everyone. So I think people should. I've written about this before for The Forecaster. I wrote an article on From Trade War to Hot War via Global Economic Collapse. So again, I've been talking about this for some time, and unfortunately we're starting to see things play out that way. And as I've talked about for years and years, I think that the next form of world reserve currency will be some sort of basket idea, basket currency, and the SDR is a ready-made example of that that already exists, that's administered by the International Monetary Fund, the special drawing rights of the IMF. People should look that up if they haven't. They can look it up on my website where I've written about it extensively in the past. But perhaps more long-term thinking and seeing where things are playing out from here, we could look at something like, not necessarily in particular, but something like Facebook's new Libra cryptocurrency, which, as people may or may not know, is going to function by way of a basket of currencies that it will be buying into. Essentially, new Libra will be created when people buy into the Libra system, and they take that money and put it away in I'm not sure which currencies they're using, but they are holding a basket of currencies, essentially reserve fiat currencies that will underlie this revolutionary crypto, quote-unquote, cryptocurrency that Facebook is launching. And long-term, I'm not sure this particular Facebook variant of that is the way that it's going to go, but I think something like that very much could be the way this goes, in that it maintains a sort of currency that's tradable and people can use at the lower levels, but which behind the scenes will be backed up by the same old bankster system. Just a new wine in old bottle, essentially.
Well, I mean, governments. I mean, how old are wine government? In new bottle?
Sorry, I screwed that up.
How are governments going to, are governments partners? I mean, we know they're partners in surveillance, you know, with every person on the planet. Are they going to be partners in this new monetary system that these tech companies like Facebook is creating with this Libra currency? Or is the government just going to shut down the internet and keep it from happening? Because, you know, governments get upset, particularly the U.S., when you start dealing with something other than their own.
Exactly. Well, that, and we already see signs that governments are getting angry about this. China there was a report recently. I have to look into this in more detail, but the report was, the headline was to the effect that China is prepping their own digital currency in response to Facebook's Libra, which I think, I have to delve into the details, but it sounds like a misnomer because China has been developing its own digital currency for several years now, and I've written about that before in the Forecaster as well, although Libra might be a good reason for them to sort of unveil it. Oh, you know, we need to stop this Facebook thing or nip it in the bud, so we're going to have our own alternative. And India is currently looking at legislation that would make trading in cryptocurrency illegal. And again, that was announced right after this Libra announcement. So clearly, I think certain governments are nervous about the idea, especially of Facebook becoming, there's a number of people involved in this Libra organization, but Facebook is spearheading it, and they were the ones that put it together. So I think everyone sees the writing on the wall and where that's coming from and which country or countries might benefit from that and which ones might not. And I think India and China, for example, might feel that they might be left out if Libra becomes some sort of international currency. So they're looking to clamp down on it. So, yeah, as always, I think there's going to be jockeying for position and backstabbing and what have you. It's not like there is one monolithic conspiracy that runs everything. I think there are different power factions and they're looking for their own seat at the table. So, as I say, I'm not convinced Libra is going to be the quote unquote, I shouldn't even use the term cryptocurrency because that's not what it is, but digital currency that will be the one to rule over us all. But it will be something like that, I think, and probably administered through some sort, one of these globalist institutions, the IMF or whatever, which, strangely enough, the U.S. arch nemesis, you know, China and Russia and other countries not only sign up to but actively promote. So that's got to give you some window into, you know, where this is ultimately heading.
Yeah, right. Let's see, we're going to be heading into a break here in just a few seconds. I want to talk when we come back about last month you wrote an article about the truth about Tiananmen Square, and the follow-up article is called The Clash of the Civilizations 2.0. We're going to talk about that when we come back from this break. Please stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with James Corbett.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. And I'm real pleased to have James Corbett joining us today. And, of course, visit his website, please, thecorbettreport.com, thecorbettreport.com, and also the International Forecaster, their website, theinternationalforecaster.com. Please make sure you request a complimentary issue and then get signed up. Get us I believe it's just online, so you have to I don't think they send hard copies anymore like they did at one point in time. I'm not sure, but it's worth getting, ladies and gentlemen. Heading into the break, we were talking about the Clash of Civilizations 2.0. And you point out that the term clash of civilization is merely a convenient justification for the United States, and regardless of how different China may be, it doesn't follow that the U.S. has to engage in a Cold War-style rivalry with the Chinese government. What do you mean by that, and would you like to perhaps give us a little more details on your article?
Yes, all right. So last month, as people may or may not have clued in, it was the 30th anniversary of the Tiananmen Square incident in 1989, and so I was doing some reporting with regards to that, and surprise, surprise, the story that we all kind of vaguely know, we just know, yeah, there was some kind of massacre, and it was the evil Chinese government. I mean, there are elements of truth to that, but there are elements of lies to that, and surprisingly, they all got swirled around together and form a kind of collective memory that's kind of half right and kind of half wrong. So what does this matter? Well, it matters specifically, of course, because this is in the context of right now China is being situated and blocked into the enemy that will, as I keep saying, and I think I will be proven right, unfortunately, as the 21st century moves along, it's going to be the big nemesis for the U.S. empire in the 21st century, regardless of whatever particular trade deal is worked out here or there. I think the bigger writing on the wall is that this is the Cold War for the 21st century. And so in that regard, I sort of ended my Tiananmen Square article by talking about the kind of strangeness of the fact that although there are provable parts of the Tiananmen Square story that are propounded in the media, even to this day, that are provably wrong, even from some of the own people involved in that, including U.S. ambassadors and BBC reporters and others who have said, no, this is wrong, I reported wrong at the time, and here's the truth, that never gets reported. Why would the Chinese sort of sit back and essentially take this? I mean, of course, they scrub any Tiananmen mentions from the Chinese internet, which obviously raises a lot of questions. I mean, shouldn't they be about free speech and whatever? But they don't actively attack this story. And I sort of left that as a question mark at the end of my Tiananmen Square article, which I tackle in my Clash of Civilizations article, which is essentially bringing up the idea, well, this is a clash of civilizations, isn't it? So, you know, we can't judge what it means for a power to be silent on some sort of accusation from our Western perspective, because these are Chinese and they have a different perspective. That brings in that specter of a clash of civilizations. This isn't just an economic power rivalry kind of thing. This isn't just the British Empire facing the rising German Empire of the, you know, early 20th century that led to World War I. This is something altogether different. I mean, back in that day, you had two European powers that shared a certain cultural history and spoke, if not the same language, at least they spoke each other's languages and understood each other's mindsets, and the royal families were all related and all of that. Well, here we have a situation where, and here let me quote director of policy planning in the U.S. State Department, Chiron Skinner, who said at a future security forum in Washington in May, when we think about the Soviet Union in that competition, the Cold War, in a way it was a fight within the Western family. This U.S.-China struggle is a fight with a really different civilization and a different ideology, and the United States hasn't had that before. In China, we have an economic competitor, we have an ideological competitor, one that really does seek a kind of global reach that many of us didn't expect a couple of decades ago. And I think it's also striking that it's the first time that we will have a great power competitor that is not Caucasian, which, again, this is a U.S. State Department representative saying this. It's kind of not the usual diplomatic mealy-mouthed language. That's kind of a strange statement. But it does feed directly into a narrative that was crafted a couple of decades ago, the narrative of the clash of civilizations. And people may have heard that term because it was first popularized in the early 90s by Samuel Huntington, first writing in Foreign Affairs, which is the mouthpiece propaganda rag for the Council on Foreign Relations, but then developing into a book called The Clash of Civilizations, where basically it's the West versus Islam, and that's going to be the big clash that's going to decide the future. And here, you know, that was in the 1990s, just after the collapse of the Soviet Union. They're looking for their next boogeyman. It's Islamic terror. And, you know, they write about this in Foreign Affairs, and people like Philip Zelikow and others write about, you know, Osama bin Laden and the threat of Islamic terror, and then lo and behold, 9/11 and the war on terror and all of that. So it all is continuing to play out exactly as Samuel Huntington, quote-unquote, predicted, right? Well, actually, Huntington got the idea for Clash of Civilizations from someone else, Bernard Lewis, who wrote about it originally in 92, I believe it was, in an article in The Atlantic. I'm sorry, 1990, he wrote The Roots of Muslim Rage, in which he proposed there was a clash of civilizations between Christendom and Islam. And he said the perhaps irrational but surely historic reaction of an ancient rival against our Judeo-Christian heritage, our secular present, and the worldwide expansion of both. Now, Bernard Lewis was a diehard Zionist and an imperial stooge, and he was thanked by Darth Cheney himself in 2006 for his contributions to essentially the war on terror narrative and everything. But to his credit, in that September 1990 article where he introduced that term, the Clash of Civilizations, he put it in kind of the nice diplomatic way that we would expect it. You know, we must strive to achieve a better appreciation of other religious and political cultures through the study of their history, their literature, and their achievements. And at the same time, we may hope they will try to achieve a better understanding of ours. You know, hold hands, kumbaya. But he was not a simpleton. He knew introducing a phrase like Clash of Civilizations into the political lexicon in the Beltway was going to have the effect of producing a Samuel Huntington who's saying, okay, there's a Clash of Civilizations, so let's figure out how to fight this new war. And it very quickly turned into all of that, unsurprisingly. So that's the framework for this. And now it's being shifted over from the Middle East and, you know, the Christian Muslim fight and whatever the way that's being framed, the war on terror, which is getting a little long in the tooth. As I say, in the long run, in the 21st century, I think it will be more directed at China. And hey, now we have this template for it. It's a clash of civilizations, the Chinese civilization in this case versus whatever, the Western civilization or however you want to frame it. And that is, I think, the template they're going to use. But just in the same way that the war on terror clash of civilizations template was a false template that was used to gin up support for a never-ending war, essentially, I think that's exactly what this clash of civilizations rhetoric is going to be used for, to gin up the never-ending war of the 21st century. And that's scary because, of course, we all know what the war on terror led to. And now that we have a war on the non-Caucasian Chinese and the new clash of civilizations, I think we can look forward to much more devastation and carnage. Whether economic, and I guess we can hope, question mark, that it's only economic, but unfortunately, potentially military as well.
Well, you know, I think there was a quote attributed to Napoleon, and for decades, but it was, China's a sleeping lion. When she wakes, she will shake the world. Let her sleep, for when she wakes, you know, she's going to shake the world, and that's what China's kind of doing, or will
China is very much an old a very, very old civilization with a very proud past, and the Chinese people are proud of their past. And it was called the, I think, the Century of Humiliation is what they called the time of the European, basically, takeover of China and its economy and the opium running and all of that, that devastated China and left it in a pretty terrible condition, which is what led to the conflicts that then led to the rise of the communists. So I think we have to, it's another big blank in the minds of most people, in the exact same way that pre-9/11, the Islamic world and, you know, Iraq, Iran, I don't know, what's the difference and who's what, I don't know anything about that, was all kind of a big blank on people's minds, which was then ridden into by this war, Clash of Civilizations narrative, the people who were already prepared for this to be the guiding narrative. Well, I think the public is disturbed by not knowing anything really essentially about China, its history, its civilization, what motivates the Chinese people, the way they look at the world. That will come into play and that will be important as we go on in the 21st century.
We wanted to talk a little bit about your most recent article, Italy versus the bankers. Speaking of bankers, any quick comments on Deutsche Bank?
I think we all knew it was going to go bust in some form, and this is just the first stage of that bust. But at any rate, it's obviously not a good thing, and at least in terms of the 18,000 people who are going to be losing their jobs and the economic turmoil that it will cause. But again, this is the nature of the system, and unfortunately, as we saw with Lehman, this could be the beginning of a much worse spiral.
You talk about Italy and the banksters, and is this Italy's turn once again to be in the European hot seat?
It looks that way. This article, Italy versus the Banksters, goes through the brief history of the never-ending euro dumpster fire, which has basically been going on since the euro was launched in 99. Remember, it was only 2 years after that Greece cooked its books. In fact, had Goldman Sachs help it to cook its books, specifically so it could join the eurozone, which of course blew up in the eurozone's face a decade later with the Greek crisis, and there was Portugal and Italy and Ireland and Spain and all their debt, sovereign debt crises and the bailouts and all of that. And people might have, I guess, turned their attention away from the European financial crisis and more towards the migration crisis and other things. But the financial crisis never really went away. It's just kind of changed hands a couple of times, and it's been kind of swept under the rug, and they've put some of the worst fires out. But it's still continuing to go. And right now, Italy is once again in the hot seat. And this is at least somewhat related to the fact of recent elections that have put in a quote-unquote, oh my God, hold your breath, clutch your pearls, populist government. And I defy you, I really do defy you to go and read any mainstream media article on this that doesn't go more than a couple of sentences before it in some way brings up the populist government and the Eurosceptic government of Italy or the extremist government. It's always put in those terms, and that gives you a sense of what's going on here. Essentially, a government got elected into power that, you know, isn't quite the kind of technocrats that the EU is used to dealing with and wants to deal with. Certainly this doesn't mean I'm choosing sides, and I think this is a great government and it's going to do all great things, but it will do some things that the banksters don't necessarily like. And one of them, which is really fascinating, and I haven't seen a whole lot of coverage about, but I think there should be more, is the potential for an introduction of an alternative currency within the eurozone. Specifically, it's been floated. It was put in the election platform of the party that ultimately is leading the current coalition government. The idea of floating a mini BOT, Buono Ordinary del Tesoro, Ordinary Treasury Bond, a mini BOTS, that would be in denominations. There's nothing, as they say, there's nothing in the law that says the smallest donation for some sort of treasury, it has to be 1,000 euro or whatever. No, it could be any denomination we want. So we're going to issue these mini-bots down to euro denominations, like 100 euro or 50 euro or 20 euro, and we're going to start giving these out to contractors with the government, and they will be redeemable through taxes. So essentially, this is an alternative currency in all but name, and it would pose some sort of threat to the ECB. It would also grease the skids if there was to be an Ital exit. If Italy was to leave the Eurozone, they would already have some sort of currency in place as a stopgap so that they wouldn't have to basically go with the euro or just start from scratch. So this is an interesting maneuver, and it certainly portends some sort of fight with the ECB, which is why the ECB turned around and immediately said that the Bank of Italy doesn't really own its gold reserves. Well, who does own its gold reserves if the Bank of Italy doesn't? Well, of course, the ECB wants everyone to believe that the ECB owns it and ultimately controls it. So now you're starting to see the Bank of Italy kind of fighting with the ECB over its own gold reserves. And it's just some crazy stuff happening over there. And as I say, there's not a lot of traction on this in a lot of the media I'm following, but I hope more people will pay attention to this because it's obviously unfolding right now. And I'm going to be very much interested to see where this goes.
Well, you know, it was just a little over a year ago that President Trump, it was reported that he had offered the United States assistance to help fund Italy's public debt. And, you know, he supported the cause of those in Italy who want to leave the euro. And so I read about that about a year ago, and, you know, here we are. And people have such a hard time understanding, James. All of this is going on, it just doesn't seem to make any difference. It's just another day. It's just some more reporting. It's just some more, you know, they can't relate to what is truly happening to those that are affected by all of this because they themselves have yet to be affected.
Well, it's a sad part of human nature, but it is a part of human nature. Most people will not really start to respond or pay attention until it affects them in some way. Some people do, a lot of people don't. They just want to continue on with their lives. It will affect them someday, and that's what you and I and others out there are doing, is trying to at least raise the alarm bells. So at the very least, when this does start to affect people, there will be sources of information that they can turn to that are not controlled by the same corporate or government entities that control a lot of the information out there. Case in point, what's happening with Jeffrey Epstein right now. I've been talking about this case for years, and finally, it's starting to get some mainstream attention. Hopefully, that will get more people involved in researching and looking at it.
I wish we would have talked a little bit about him.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that next time for sure, depending on what's released here in the next couple of weeks. But thank you once again for joining me, and I so do enjoy it, and so do the listeners. We'll be back, ladies and gentlemen. Please, until then, be safe, good night, and God bless.